Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going fantastic.
How do you like our thunderstorms?
Wet. I'm only just slightly wet.
Right?
Yeah, it was wicked. The storms we've been getting the last 24 hours are crazy.
Means the trout are starting to run.
Yeah, could mean that. Yeah.
Well, yep. No, could. It means that.
We, in Bowmanville, there's, everybody goes down to watch the fish do the fish run. Anyways, we were there. There was still snow on the ground, ice on the river, and we saw fish trying to jump.
Up the bladder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And we were like, what's going on?
Brown nosers. Trying to get ahead of everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to be the first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, tis the season, buddy. Yesterday there was one pile of snow left on our street.
Oh, yeah.
And today it's gone.
It's got everything. Got to be gone
everything's
now.
Everything's gone.
So much rain. It was so warm last 2 days.
That thunder storm we had in the middle of the night was like right over our house.
Yeah. Same.
Like it was just like phenomenal.
And it was for like 3 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Just constant flashing all that.
Yeah. Whew. There were extra furry bodies on the bed last night.
Oh. Save us.
Hey,
save
what's us. Going on, man? Yeah, what's happening here? I went out, took the diggity dog there for a walk in the leash-free area on the weekend. Thought, you know what? Let's go out and get some fresh air and not having too much to do at that point. So we'll take a couple hours, go out. And, you know, it's the trails I thought wouldn't be as bad because everything had melted. But then the water refroze.
Oh.
So everything's like a skating rink.
Oh.
Then there's this hill you go down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was clear because all the water had run down.
Yeah.
So we go. And I've been going there. I'm thinking there's a couple spots I want to go back with my camera gear and do some black and white photography. So I'm sitting there, this will look good. I want to take a picture of it with my phone so that I can, you know, sort of
visualize it
and then come back with my gear when there's no ice and stuff. So I take the picture. I take one little step back, found a root. Down I go like a sack of potatoes, sliced my hand up, bruised my elbow. And it's like, well, at least there is nobody watching. The dog's looking at me like, dumbass. So, and this is after Tracy had sent me a text going, have fun, don't slip and fall. So I sent her a picture and there's blood all up in my hand and everything like that. And she says, because she's a nurse.
Yeah.
So everything is like, I swear, if I got a hangnail, she's looking to get me into a cast.
Peroxide
stitches.
Band-aids, cleaning.
Oh, yeah.
Wipe away so from the wound.
She sends me, oh, no, get home, wash it really well, put polysporin on it and all that. And I said, I licked it. It's clean.
All good. I licked it. It's clean.
If you have a significant other that is a nurse, trust me, that's the best thing to say. As long as I've known her, I was rock climbing one time and sliced my hand wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And hindsight, probably not the smartest thing I've done, but I just took a whole bunch of my climbing chalk, padded it in there, taped it all up, and continued climbing for another few hours. Got home. Oh, there was a lot of dirt in there. Got cleaned up. I don't know to this day if I should have got stitches, but according to her, you know, I think my hand should have been amputated. And
I've seen a couple stories come up recently about this, about people getting cuts, getting licked by a dog. So there's Pasturella capnostophaga.
Big diseasey words.
Big bacteria words. Anyways, you can get a really bad infection from letting a dog lick a cut.
That's why I didn't let my dog lick the cut. I licked it myself.
Do it yourself.
Right?
This is a self-serve first aid center.
She's looking at me. I ain't licking that. Ew.
Yes, exactly.
The dog will go out in the backyard and eat her own poop, but she won't lick a bloody hand. Thanks, pal. Gearing up for some canoe trips this year. And we were just looking at Amazon so I can go get my convict shirt.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do that. For those that don't remember, scientists did a study. They painted cows like zebras.
Yeah.
And the cows that they painted like zebras. And yes, I'm sure it was removable paint.
Zebra?
a zebra. The ones they painted that black and white stripes were harassed less by the bugs.
I've heard
than
this.
The ones that weren't painted. And so I'm thinking, because I was talking about doing this last year, but it was too late for the really big bug season.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go grab a, well, I can just get one cheapy off of Amazon.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, convict stripes go left and right.
Oh, yes.
And referee stripes go up
vertical.
And down.
Yeah.
Does it make a difference?
Hmm.
If it's convict stripes or referee stripes?
Well, referee stripes would be less insulting for the ex-cons. Are you making fun of me?
Yeah, you never know. Or now we're going to find all the ex-cons out in in the wilderness. Yeah, so I'm going to go get a striped shirt and see if there's any merit to that theory.
Be interesting to see.
Put the scientific theory into
yes. Very practice. Scientific test. Very, right?
Well, they
very
did it in a field with cows. I mean, it's got to be some basis to yeah. it, right? So we'll just take it and make some practical studies. And
I hear
find
flamethrowers work well, too, to keep the bugs away.
Yeah. But when you're sitting there camping underneath those nice trees.
Or under a tarp or in a tent.
Yeah, I think that has more of an issue.
Whoa, my tent leaks.
Might be that big flamethrower hole right through the middle. Yeah, but do you see any bugs?
Exactly.
Oh, the good times. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this paddling season so much.
Mm-hmm.
Once my bruised elbow heals. The wife thinks I'm a dumbass, and I just keep proving her right. Well, I don't want to make her think it was a phase.
Yeah, a phase. I need to be consistent.
He'll grow out of it. No! No, he won't! That's my theory. What else is up? Nothing? Not happening? Nothing happening?
Not much, no. Not much.
Really?
Just plugging away at work, planning some canoe trips.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are some, I think they're all the same weekend, but Float Your Fan Day Down the Ganny's coming up.
That's coming up, yeah. Yeah, there's a few things coming up.
Yeah.
One of the longest canoe races in Eastern Ontario is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up April. Oh, that's the April 11th too. That's what the canoe symposium at the canoe museum is on that day.
Oh yeah. I have tickets for that.
So do I.
Hmm.
One of the longest canoe races in Eastern Ontario was taking place in a picturesque spot located just over 4 hours from Toronto in April. 53rd annual Raisin River Canoe Race will run April 11th. On the United Counties of Stormont, Dundas, and Glengarry, also known as SDG counties. I got sent this article about this race so many times. It's like, okay, how come none of you people actually race it?
Yeah. I've never raced it, but I have watched. When I was in college, a couple of my buddies, they did the Raisin River Canoe Race. And at the typical spot, which is one of the more popular spots to stand by and watch the race. And there's a lot of people there. It was raining that day, and there's still a lot of people.
The Martintown Dam.
Yeah. So we were watching. They they shot the dam, dumped coming out of the dam, and then they wrapped their rental canoe around a tree.
It folded. Better than their own canoe.
The bow and stern were kissing each other. It was...
Wow. do you offer kayak canoe pickup? Yes, we do. Okay, you can go pick it up in the river.
You need waders.
It's wrapped around the tree. Trust me, you'll see it. It's the only one there.
Yes. It's red. You'll see it.
Thanks. I'm going to recommend your store to everybody I know.
Yeah, they straightened it out, but there's clearly damage.
It'll buff out, trust me. Maybe they won't notice. Who's going to notice?
It's got a shimmy at high speed.
Speed wobble. 53 years, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Nearly 30-kilometer race first began in 1973 and has since become a long-standing spring tradition in eastern Ontario, attracting paddlers of all ages and abilities from across the region and beyond. That's from Vincent Pilon, communication specialist at the Raisin Region Conservation Authority. Each year, participants put their speed and endurance to the test as they navigate swift currents, rushing rapids, and cold spring flows in one of the area's most anticipated outdoor events. The race is held annually in April to coincide with spring melt, which brings higher water levels and fast flows for contestants. Now, if you're going 30 kilometers, they ought to do a reverse one, too.
Oh, yeah.
So then you got to go back
upstream.
Could you imagine that this time of year?
Could not imagine.
Yeah. 2026 Raisin River Canoe Race will kick off 10:30 South Stormont from the field beside St. Andrew's Catholic School. Course travels down the river before concluding in South Glengarry's Williamstown. The race has been steadily growing in popularity since its start last year in 2025. It reached record registration numbers with 318 boats, 498 paddlers.
That's a lot. That's amazing.
That's almost like too many.
Yeah, I know.
And then, I mean, you think about the parking logistics and everything like that, to get your boats to the water. But still, like, over 300 boats going down.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. Canoes, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, all zipping down there. Average time to reach the finish line was 4 hours and 17 minutes. Fastest time clocking in at just over 2 hours and 34 minutes. Because apparently on that Saturday, they had other things to do.
Gotta go.
Gotta go. 2 hours, 34 minutes. All right, pack them up. Let's go. Spectators are also encouraged to come out and enjoy the action. Apparently this Martintown Dam is like one of the most popular spots.
Yes.
Between 11:30 and 1:30.
Is a good time to be at the dam.
Is a good time to come and see the chaos. And so at that dam, apparently, you can either get out and portage around on the left, mm-hmm. or there's a single chute, and you have to do it single file. So if there's 20 of you, you got to wait your turn.
Yeah, there's a long, skinny tongue. You got to shoot through the middle.
Yeah, hopefully.
So the dam is also a bridge. So you drive over this thing, and so you're basically standing along the shoreline or standing on the bridge watching people disappear underneath it.
Throwing watermelons. Each year, hundreds gather along shorelines and bridges at key viewing points to cheer on racers as they pass by in canoes, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards. The race is a wonderful way to bring community members and visitors together to celebrate and enjoy the local river. After the race, a dinner takes place. 19641 County Road 19 in Williamstown, where race results will be announced. $12 for the dinner, public, or everybody's allowed in. So it's not just for the racers themselves.
Yeah.
So public are allowed in. New this year, the SDG Historical Society will also be part of the post-race dinner to showcase the role of Raisin River within our communities over the past centuries.
A little bit of learning with your dinner.
Right? Dinner and learning. For those who are interested in taking part in the race, participants can pre-register online anytime before April 8th at rrca.on.ca. Limited registration may be available on race day, space permitting. So it's not that expensive. They do it by boat, not by person, which mm-hmm. is nice. Recreational canoes, pro canoes, 17 foot open, 2 people kayaks are all $40. If you register online, if you register race day, add $20 to that. So it comes $60. Single pro canoe, single rec canoe, single long kayak, single short kayak, and stand up paddleboard are all $20 or $30 on race day. Offering discounts of $10 per boat for student paddlers who register online. So if you and someone else are going to go, you'll save $10 on your $40. Canoes over 17 feet are considered to be in the pro category. Canoes under 16 feet are considered recreational. and those between 16 and 17 feet fall into the 17-foot open category.
Curious.
Mm-hmm. They're all $40 regardless.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Paid play.
Yeah, it's just if you're, I don't know what the difference between the pro. What would be the pro?
I guess they just want to break it down into groupings.
Right? Everybody's got to be labeled
easier
now.
Easier to give away prizes.
Yeah, more prizes, yeah. Right? So if you're looking at joining something like
on
that.
April 11th.
Yeah. rrca.on.ca.
Brazen River Canoe Association.on.ca.
Yeah. Woohoo! Go do it. And don't wrap your canoe around a tree.
Exactly.
Those are the people that Derek used to hang out with.
Be my old military buddies when we were in college. St. Lawrence College, Cornwall, Ontario.
Woohoo!
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of races.
Hmm.
The Thames. You heard of it?
I may have heard of it.
Yeah. It's been around for many, many years.
There's one thing I want to do, and I see, I follow a lot of people that post about it online. They call it mudlarking. You got to get a permit. And at low tide, you can walk the bottom of the Thames. And you look for stuff. People find like meerschaum pipes and coins and jewelry and all
kinds of
stuff.
They've been throwing stuff in there for centuries.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's lots of stuff to find.
There's people that on Instagram and stuff like that, they have channels and they post stuff that they've found.
Yeah.
Because if there was a shipwreck offshore, stuff would go in there and get covered because of tides and that and stuff. Because they do it along the coastline as well, right?
And it's just, it's the bed is just, everybody throws stuff in there anyways. If you break something or if things just dispose of it, get rid of some bricks, you just throw it in the Thames. The river takes care of everything.
Right.
And so there's, plus people, you know, lose stuff. So, cool.
Is that like, where did I see it? The canals, it's one of the canals in Europe. People just toss stuff. Oh. And they drain it.
Amsterdam. So
is it Amsterdam they drained?
They drain portions of it periodically. And, you know, like they're pulling out like 30, 40 bicycles and you name it.
Carts.
Exactly.
Dryer. Tires.
There's so much stuff that ends up there. Yeah, I saw something just recently. They drained a section of it. They dammed it off and drained it dry. And they were clearing out stuff that would be a hazard to navigation. So, like, lots of bikes. It's amazing how many bicycles. Like, why are so many people throwing bicycles in there? Anyways.
There's so many bicycles. I'll just get a new one.
But they clear it out, empty the mud out, and then refill it. And so they do a couple segments every year.
Yeah. So that's something. Yeah. Well, anyway, speaking of the Thames. A pair of kayakers has smashed the world record for the fastest time to paddle down the navigable Thames in a time of 14 hours, 3 minutes, beating the previous record by 1 hour and 41 minutes.
That's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. Brent Kreft, 32, and Joe Pedersen, 27, started at dawn at Lechlade and paddled nearly 200 kilometers down the Thames in a double kayak to Teddington, navigating 43 lock portages where they had to run while carrying their boat.
So that would really slow you down.
Especially in a kayak, getting in and out of a kayak at a lock.
Hopping out and running to the next. Wow. How many? 43 lock portages.
43 lock. So that would be like going from Kingston to Ottawa on the canal system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's quite that many locks, but still. Like just nonstop. I would rather do that in a canoe than a kayak, a double kayak.
Yeah, you get easier to hop in and out.
Previous record was 15 hours and 44 minutes. Huh. So they shaved a good time off of that.
It's the time that the time-consuming part of it would be all those portages, hopping in and out and running around the.
Because if you get your rhythm going, you guys are both paddle stroking the same.
You just keep going. You're cruising along at high speed.
You're cruising high speed.
But then you
got
to pull up to the shore, crawl out, lift it up, run over the other side.
Get back in.
Yeah.
Smokes if you got them.
Yeah.
They're no strangers to ultramarathon kayaking, having raced the notorious 125-mile Devizes to Westminster race in last Easter, and that's coming up again this Easter. Both have also represented Great Britain in marathon racing before. Combination of a fast-flowing river, longer days, and warmer weather made for optimal conditions to attempt a record. See, that's one thing is the longer days when you're getting into June and stuff. Mm. Like, now it's starting to get longer, but June yep. is the peak time to do something like this.
Yeah, you have the most daylight.
The most daylight.
Yeah.
And if you can, like when we did the Brent Run, June, and it was a full moon.
Yes.
So that was like the perfect time to do the Brent Run.
Yeah.
The wind just didn't participate.
Unfortunately.
Well, it did participate. A little too excitingly. fast-flowing conditions meant that Pedersen, who was responsible for steering the boat, had to use his arms more, causing him issues with tennis elbow and wrist pain. Both paddlers also suffered with fatigue at points throughout their massive effort. Well, if you're going for 14 hours...
Yeah, it's going to get...
Yeah. It's going to get a little tiring, I would think. He said... It's when you start doing the maths, and it's like, I'm tired 5 hours in, and I've still got 9 hours to go. You realize that 9 hours is quite a long time. Especially with all those little portages in there.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't say anything about what kind of other traffic was. I got to think at this time of year, it's probably not a ton of traffic, but you don't know.
Yeah.
It's the navigable section, so.
Exactly. So there's going to be boats queuing up for the locks and so on.
Kraft said, when we hit the low and my shoulders started getting sore, I remember being like, I shouldn't take it so lightly. It's so far. I was going into it a little bit more like, this is just a lighthearted adventure, which meant that I was not quite prepared for how painful it would still be.
Yep.
Right? The pair were met at points by supporters on the riverbank. I was very touched. They thought, It was a worthwhile, interesting thing to do, to come up and say hi, says Kraft. Pedersen's highlight was Molesley Weir. He said there were so many people there, everyone was really lively. By then, it would have taken a genuinely serious disaster to have not broken the record, so it was quite a jubilant mood. Pedersen and Kraft had a support crew who provided them with food and changed their drink bottles at portages. Support crew had an important role because fueling is a key part of success in ultra challenges. Pedersen fueled himself with carbohydrate drinks, flapjacks, and boiled potatoes.
Flapjacks?
Pancakes. Pancakes and boiled potatoes? And a couple of drinks. I think I take granola bars.
They are British.
How do you eat that on the go, though? Like, it's not something you just stuff in your face.
So it's a potato burrito with a flapjack as the wrap.
It would have to be. Wrap the boiled potatoes in the pancake, stuff it in your face, wash it down with a carbohydrate drink, and off you go. Previous races, Kraft struggled with nausea and acid reflux, so she relied mainly on carbohydrate drinks, energy gels, sweets, and dates for this record attempt. I love eating dates and figs.
Mm.
I'll get one of those rings of figs when I go shopping.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I just sit there and I'll mow down on them. I've never taken them on a trip, though.
They store well.
Mm-hmm.
They don't spoil easily.
Yeah. Huh. After paddling the final stretch in darkness, the pair celebrated their effort in Teddington with sparklers alongside paddlers from Richmond Canoe Club, where Pedersen trains. There's definitely a bit of euphoria when you stop, he says, but the next day is akin to a hangover. I felt like I could move around, but I just felt tired and weak and headachy. I couldn't feel my fingertips, which is still a bit of an ongoing issue. Well, you gotta think so. You're going for 14 hours, yeah. And all of a sudden stop. Everything sort of catches up, right? Kraft says, when I get off the water, I feel like the ground is rocking, almost like I've been in the water for so long that I still feel like I'm rocking. So for a while, I thought I was just dizzy and I just needed to sit down. As a young athlete, Kraft used to hate longer distance run races, gaining the nickname Short Course from her coach because she would quit training sessions and efforts early. She attributed this to a lack of confidence, something which has developed over the years. She grew up in South Africa, where she got into kayaking through the sport of surf life saving, which involves swimming, running, paddling a kneeboard, and paddling a surf ski. Upon moving to the UK, Kreft joined Oxford Falcon Boat Club at the age of 27, gradually made her return to competitive racing. She is now faster than she ever was as a junior. Well, that's pretty cool.
Lots of practice.
Pedersen joined Banbury Canoe Club, age 13, to kayak with friends. And he says, there was a great group of people there, and I think it's always easier when you're going down to train with people you like seeing. Back then, I still am, but I was very competitive, so I would work really hard to do better, and that kind of carried on. Pear will also both compete for the opportunity to represent Great Britain in marathon kayaking this summer. Kreft will also represent Great Britain in ocean racing. Next year, they'll take on the 125-mile Devizes to Westminster race on Easter weekend, and they'll be likely be the favorites to win.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you always wonder, after something like that, doing the Thames and, you know, like a long thing like that, how bad do you feel?
I know. Like, your body's all worn out. And
right? You got to just recoup and make up, and it's just like, but it's just like guys going to the gym and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, like when they're all going to the, all the people go to the gym and they're working out, it's leg day, it's arm day, it's this day, it's that day.
Yeah.
And then, I got to drink these protein shakes and all this other stuff to, you know, for my muscles to recoup. And
I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
Right? Yeah. I went to the gym a couple of times. Yeah. I was using the running machine thingies there and the rowing machines.
Oh, yeah.
Right, to get the legs going and the cardiac and stuff like that. And but you go there and it's so busy that you're just standing around like, okay, I want to use that machine, and there's people waiting.
There's people on it. There's somebody sitting, stand beside it. And
yeah, not going to happen. So, yeah, so I don't go anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm much happier. I spent my days at the donut shop. Working that arm.
Exactly.
Woo, one more donut, one more bug. A little update on Banff.
Oh, yes.
Banff, they're closing everything and all that sort of stuff. As we knew would happen, some people are not happy.
Of course.
Some paddlers are calling on Parks Canada to consider stronger enforcement and cleaning stations before closing most of Banff National Park's rivers and lakes to canoes and kayaks to help prevent the spread of whirling disease. Parks Canada, as we mentioned there, had shut down paddling in the Bow Lake, Moraine Lake, along with much of Banff's backcountry, except about 20 popular water bodies to help prevent the spread of this aquatic invasive species. Whirling disease has about a 90% mortality rates in some fish species, so you got to protect it. Michael Holroyd, executive director of Alberta Whitewater Association, said many of the group's members are devastated about the impacts on their recreation. He said good policies from other jurisdictions include education, communication with user groups and provinces, self-cleaning stations, enforcement, and penalties like fines rather than outright bans. Fines are great if you get caught. That's my opinion.
Exactly.
Fines don't mean diddly squat if the persons don't get caught.
Mm-hmm.
We've been asking for consultation for a few years, but they chose to simply drop regulations on everyone rather than learning more first. I don't think it's that simple, buddy.
No.
We think Parks is taking the easy way out instead of addressing the problem and maintaining recreation.
But you have to operate based on the lowest common denominator, and that's the people who don't follow rules.
Mm-hmm.
Who are going to say, my boat's clean enough.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. I don't care.
Holroyd says, Pipestone River is a popular after-work river in the spring. The Mestalla is a world-renowned whitewater river. The Cascade is a hidden gem that requires a 7-kilometer walk carrying a boat to get into, but is a popular rite of passage. 7-kilometer walk? Yeah, I'm not that invested.
Yeah.
Many other smaller rivers and creeks see low impact use by kayaks and pack rafts. Marie Villard, Aquatic Invasive Species Project Coordinator for Lake Louise Yoho and Kootenai Field Unit, said Parks Canada understands the disappointment for visitors who would like to continue recreating on some of these water bodies. She says, we are trying to find a balance between protection of our sensitive ecosystems as well as finding locations and opportunities for visitors to continue water activity recreation in the parks. And that's what it comes down to, is you got to find the balance. And if it means right off the bat, okay, let's cut everything down.
Yep.
And then we can look at stuff. And they're doing these assessments in other areas and have closed places for a couple of years and noticed everything's coming back fine.
Yes.
So it's not, he can't say they haven't looked at anything, because they have been.
And you also have to consider that, so they're trying to protect these popular lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're popular for angling or for recreation or for paddling, whatever. So they're trying to protect them. But if you didn't protect them and they became lakes known for whirling disease, then the people that enter those lakes and then go elsewhere is just going to spread it catastrophically.
So fast. Francois Massey, superintendent of the Lake Louise Yoho Kootenai Field Unit, said a new detection of whirling disease was discovered in Lake Louise in 2025. He said it likely spread from the Bow River or other infected waters via watercraft or fishing equipment. It's unlikely that whirling disease was spread to Lake Louise through natural fish movement, because there's a natural fish barrier between Lake Louise and the Bow River. So it's not the fish bringing it in.
Exactly. Right? It's recreationalists.
So, and I will say, as much as I sympathize with the paddlers, I think the protection of the Rockies and their waterways is a tad more important.
Yeah.
For us, if all of a sudden they said no more paddling in Algonquin Park, and that's 7,700 square kilometers of paddling.
That'd freak people out.
That would more than freak people out. If they said no more paddling, no more swimming, no more fishing, no more, you keep your butt on dry land. Like, that would be just like, but at the end of the day, if they're doing it for like a couple of years to protect and make sure that is there for the future.
What lake is it that has the blue-green algae that they've closed down? Lavier?
Was it Lavier?
I can't remember.
Because we paddled through there last year.
Yeah.
Is that 2 years ago now?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Wow, you're old.
But they had to close it down. It wasn't
blue-green.
It wasn't really to stop the spread. It was because it's dangerous for humans and animals.
Yeah.
To drink that water. I wonder how many like moose and bears and whatnot got sick from drinking that water in that lake. You can't ban animals from drinking it. What are you gonna do?
It's not gonna Yo, Winnie the Pooh, stay out. Tell your buddy Smokey the Bear.
Yeah. And here's lots of stories about people and their dogs. The dogs would like chase a ball in the water and get sick because they start throwing up because of the blue green algae contamination.
Well, we talked about that already this year. That had happened. Out west. Some lady's dog.
Yeah, so
got sick from it and died.
It makes sense to close these things down. It's like pass through only. Do not stop. Do not consume water.
And as for the stronger enforcement, cleaning stations, education, all that sort of stuff, you can put as much education as you want out there, but we all know that there's going to be those people that just can't be bothered.
Yep. There's too many people
they
like that.
They don't care. They're going to do what they want to do because, you know, they're important.
Yeah, self-important.
And it's just like, you know what? They're going to be the ones that spread it. And there was also, I was reading one thing, is you're clean. If you go paddling in one, you get your clean certificate, so you can go paddling.
Yeah.
Your boat has to be dry for 48 hours before you go to another water body.
Yeah.
cleaned and dried for 48 hours. So you get to go paddling once every couple of days.
Or you go to the water body and you rent a water
something that's there.
At the lake that's approved to be on the lake.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just a little update on what's happened out that way.
Yeah. And the guy that's complaining about it, he's probably one of these guys that, I can do what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens. But if I had my way, yeah, keep the restrictions in. As much as I sympathize with them out there. And
oh, yeah.
I'd put myself in a what if it was here sort of thing. I would definitely be like, yeah, you know what? Let's just keep it closed and protect it. Just, you know, safety first. Just keep it closed and see what happens, you know? Better be safe than sorry, as they say. Speaking of being safer than sorry.
Yes.
So this... Again, this came across this one. You came across this one. And, we always preach about the shoulder seasons, that be safe. If you have the proper gear at certain points, like when there's ice in the water, wear your dry suit. If you don't have the proper safety gear, then sorry, you're not going into the water today. Because if you do go in the water, chances are, you're not coming out of the water. In early March, Michigan paddler Kevin Miller had a close call while kayaking in the ice-filled Muskegon River with his friend Joe Miller, apparently no relation. They just both have the same last name. He was in an open cockpit Old Town Loon 126 kayak with nylon steel spray skirt when shifting ice capsized his canoe or his kayak.
Now, I will say credit to him for sharing this story.
Yes. Yes.
Because, like, obviously a lot of people are going to go, whoa, I'm really embarrassed. I was an idiot. I did this. I did that. I'm not going to talk about it. But he, credit to him, she's sharing the story online. And it's going to help somebody out there. They're going to go, oh.
I love me a good old learn from other people's mistakes
yes.
story.
Yes.
You know?
I prefer to learn from others' mistakes instead yes. of my own.
Your dumbassness stopped me from being a dumbass.
Exactly.
My wife thanks you. So he wrote a Facebook post about the incident and what happened, and this is what it is. I wanted to share a story of a recent kayaking adventure that was unlike any other. We entered the water, and the river was absolutely beautiful, and we were off. It started with an incredible experience of floating on an iceberg for nearly 25 minutes. You lazy... As the ice began to break up, we slid back into the water exactly as planned. However, while maneuvering the next area, my kayak was caught in churning water. Despite my efforts to stay upright and reach a sheet of ice where Joe was positioned, a surge of large ice pieces hit my kayak and dumped me into the water. Before I could react, I was sucked under the ice. My inflatable PFD deployed, but I lost my glasses in the process. I was trapped under the ice for about 45 seconds and moved 40 to 60 feet downstream. It was the longest yet fastest 45 seconds of my life. Tried to break through the 6 to 8 inches of ice wherever I saw light, but it was impossible. Just as I reached the point where I could no longer hold my breath and had accepted the situation, I saw light above me. I reached up and realized I had resurfaced. Joe had some bystanders on the shore, and they were screaming that I was out. Joe managed a perfect shot, pushing his kayak right into my hands so I could steady myself. I held on and swam towards the shore, while making sure Joe and the others stayed out of the water for their own safety. Bystander helped pull me up onto the shore and up to a hill to safety. EMS arrived shortly after to assess me. Miraculously, my only injuries were some abrasions to my face, bruised hands from fighting the ice, and a few bumps on my head that required 3 staples. I was taken to a local hospital where they used a bear hugger to warm me up, and I was released a few hours later. All in all, it was an amazing day, and I'm incredibly grateful to be here.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Data from the U.S. Geological Survey shows that between March 3rd and 10th, 2026, Muskegon River levels near Croton, Michigan, rose from approximately 5.2 feet to nearly 7 feet. Additional data shows the water temperatures were 35 degrees Fahrenheit or 2 degrees Celsius, so just above freezing, between March 4th and 7th. Miller shared that he was wearing neither a dry suit nor wetsuit during the incident, and his core temperature emerged from 10 minutes in the river was 98.2 Fahrenheit, 36.8 Celsius.
This isn't too low.
Isn't too low, but he's damn lucky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
the oxygen that...
Yeah.
You got a little bit of time before you get hypothermia, but...
But the oxygen is less. Yeah. Comments on his Facebook post varied from "you are lucky" to more harsh comments. It took courage to post this. You could very well save a life by allowing others to learn from your close calls, wrote one commenter. Others... noted clear lessons from Miller's experience. First, I'm glad you survived, said another commenter before noting a few takeaways from the experience, including avoiding paddling on moving current with thick ice sheets, the importance of a dry suit in winter paddling conditions, and the importance of a foam PFD for paddling in cold conditions. You are also brave to put this out there in this group. Take what you've learned and share it with others so you might prevent someone else from making the same mistakes. Another commenter who shared that he regularly paddles with ice on Lake Superior noted that floating and drifting ice can be one of the most dangerous aspects of winter kayaking. Even a gentle breeze can move the ice around and block you from your takeout, he said. The best plan is, if things are iffy, is to leave your kayak on the car.
Yeah, it's, I can't imagine mixing the combination of moving and breaking up ice and paddling. Like they were, it seems on the surface, that seems like it would be fun. They're going to ride down the river and they run up on top of some larger ice floes and sit on it and float down with it. So sure, that sounds fun, but that mixed media type mixed with moving water and ice floes and chunks of ice and so on, it just seems kind of risky, especially considering the fact that you're going to play on freezing cold water, play amongst ice floes without a wetsuit or a dry suit.
Yeah.
So it's like, what was the, I don't know what the thought process going into that. And yes, he had a inflatable PFD, but you're relying heavily on the automatic feature of that PFD.
And if it malfunctions. Right?
Because I've got a couple of these PFDs for sailing, and you have the option of buying the more expensive one, which detects water, presence of water, and it will inflate automatically, which is also a risk in heavy rain because you can set off the sensor that way. Or you have to have the presence of mind and be conscious and pull the ripcord to make it inflate. And once you inflate it, unless you have spare CO2 cartridges, you're not gonna squish it back down and use it again. It's like, why are you using an inflatable PFD and moving water?
Mm-hmm.
The risk is really high.
In regards to what dude's saying about the moving ice, Don Starkle, he did paddle to the Amazon. He also did a trip up the Northwest Passageway.
Oh, okay.
And he got caught in moving ice. And, you know, with the wind start blowing, and all of a sudden your pass is blocked.
Yeah.
Right? So where you think you're going, like, all of a sudden it's blocked, so you got to go around, and it may guide you into some place you don't want to be.
Well, right? The Arctic Cowboys, in their first or second year, I can't remember which one, but when they left and they started their trip, the wind caught in and blew in some ice, and so they got trapped in amongst ice floes, and they had to climb up on top of the ice floes. And then walk back across the top of the ice floes because the wind had squished everything together and there was no more paddling to do. And so they had to come ashore and wait like, I think, a week or something for it to clear up again.
Yeah, and when you got fast-moving water that's shooting these ice,
right?
Big chunks of ice down, oof. That's going to happen a lot faster.
Yeah, there's
so you got to you got to beware.
A lot of risks there. A lot of risks. Yeah.
Miller says, unfortunately, I wasn't wearing a dry suit or wet suit. I had on scuba boots, an Arctic base layer, waterproof pants, base layer shirt, a hoodie paddling jacket. I also had an inflatable PFD. It opened automatically just as I was pulled under the ice. Advice for others paddling in the shoulder season? First off, dress for immersion with a dry suit, which I will be getting before heading out again. Also, make sure to wear a proper PFD. And if in doubt, stay off the water if it is churning pieces of ice the size of a car. So, you know, at least he's learning something from
this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's being open and honest with it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the most important takeaways are to always make sure to be properly outfitted, including a dry suit, appropriate base layers, PFD, dry clothes in a dry bag. Also have a solid plan in place for if things go south and know when to portage, which would have stopped us from getting into trouble. And if something does happen, try to stay calm. And that's one of the things he did say was that everybody on the shore, as loud as they were saying, hey, pointing and yelling that they saw him and stuff like that, everybody was relatively calm.
Yes.
Keeping, you know, keep an eye out to get him out of the water. And his buddy there just, you know, taking the kayak, see where he was, and just boom, shot it straight out to him. Yeah. So he was able to grab onto that and use that for to keep him out and that sort of thing, and uses an aid to get to shore. People on shore had already called EMS and everything like that. So, you know, it was a group thing, helped him, and that's why he's able to post this now.
Yes.
Because it could have been a total different
story.
Because when I'm searching for topics every week, the amount of rescues or police recovered,
yes,
Coast Guard recovered, yes, you know, fire people recovered, the amount of those stories, ooh, that we come across every week, we could do a separate podcast on those alone.
Yeah.
The amount of water deaths every year and injuries and you know, like swept out because the winds took them.
And we see these stories, but we don't always cover them because there's too many.
It would be a 2-hour podcast.
And it wouldn't be fun.
No, you don't want to hear about all that. So hearing him come out with this sort of stuff and say, hey, here's, you know, from somebody that survived, it could have totally been going the other way, and it could have been a topic I skipped over because it didn't go the way
he needed
it to go. So yeah, pay attention to this one if you're going out in the early seasons, paddling seasons. I know it's, especially up here in Canada, you know, everybody's eager to get back on the water and get out for their trips and stuff like that.
It's been a long winter. Everybody's, you know,
tired. They get tired of it this time of year. Yeah. They see the water opening.
Here in Southern Ontario, we've had a lot of snow and late snow and delayed spring and so on. People are anxious to get out there, but you have to be smart about it.
Go out for hikes first with your dog.
Exactly.
Fall on your ass.
Yep.
Cut your hand out. Lick it clean.
Find bears as they come out of hibernation.
Right?
hungry
that's
bears.
That's the time to hug one because they're still groggy.
They're still
if
groggy
you're intent on hugging a bear, which I highly, highly disapprove of.
Discourage. But if you're gonna.
They're groggy at that point. But they're going to be angry because the first thing they're doing is getting rid of that clog that they have there.
They've been laying there in hibernation, and they've got a lot of waste to vacate. They're very hungry. They're dehydrated, and they're not going to be in the best of moods.
Right? It's like a morning person. Hey, Grandpa, good morning. Get out of my way.
Get off my lawn.
Grandma's heading to the bathroom first. There's other things to do than get on the water and dodge death, as it were.
Yes.
If you're getting out there, like we get out there, we got the all year round. We got the dry suits and stuff like that. So, you know, and we even still with the dry suits, we take a look at the weather and whatnot. A couple weeks back, we were supposed to go out in there, you know, 2 to 3 meter waves.
Yep.
That was a calm. That calmed down from what? You know, so you look at that. You still got to use your, even with the proper gear, you still have to use your brain.
Yes.
You know, your smarticle particles, as it were, and make the decision whether you, as I say, leave the boat on the roof of the car or go out and, it was midsummer, that'd be one thing because it's, you know, warmer.
Mm-hmm.
But this time of year, you have to. If you're not listening to the doubts in your head, you're not yes. gonna. Things are not going to yeah. end up well. You know, if you aren't sitting there on the shore going, I don't know.
Is this the day I win a Darwin Award or? Right.
Yeah, you got to have those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in situations where it's just like, you know what? If I keep going. Yeah, chances are. Mm-hmm. The minute you say chances are.
Yeah, you're already winning.
Yeah, you just already nailed your, time to turn back sort of thing, because chances are otherwise as mm-hmm. well. So, good for Miller for posting this out there and putting it out there for people to see. Yeah, he's going to take some good old-fashioned ribbon over it. You know, people are going to call him an idiot, and you know what? If it saves somebody else's life... Then call me an idiot all day long.
He learned a lesson and survived to tell it.
Yep. Right? Well, plus his buddy.
Yeah.
You know, his non-related Miller Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody on shore, if any of them are paddlers, they've all watched it.
Exactly.
And you know they've all gone. I was down at the river today.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy went over. And he wasn't wearing that. He wasn't doing that. And he, you know. So it's already spread to those people. Because you're not going to go, so what'd you see down the river today? Nothing.
Yeah. Saw some ice flowing down the river.
I saw some ice. There was some big ice. Big as cars, some say. Take it to heart. Life changes in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's touch on some rafting, shall we? Colorado rafting season. Colorado's dry winter is now raising concerns about what summer recreation could look like, but rafting outfitters say the outlook isn't as bleak as it might seem. Dillon Reservoir low snowpack paints a concerning picture, with statewide levels dipping to record lows. But according to AVA rafting and ziplining owner Duke Bradford, snowpack is only part of the equation. That's a big part.
Yep.
Bradford said rafting conditions depend heavily on spring and summer rains, especially on free-flowing rivers like Clear Creek near Idaho Springs. He explained what river levels measured in cubic feet per second could rise dramatically overnight with the right storm. But that's a one-time thing, though, because once that water goes, the CFS can go up and double overnight, so we like our opportunities here, he says. While the lack of snow melt can contribute to lower, slower river flows, Bradford said it didn't necessarily hurt his rafting experience. In fact, calmer conditions often made trips more accessible for families and less experienced rafters. True.
Yep.
Because, some of the things, I'd love to try that, but, I've seen the pictures, and that's a bit too much for me. Well, if it's half that height, okay, we're in. Is it going to be the biggest whitewater we've ever seen? Probably not, but I'm not sure that's always the focus. Sometimes it's just getting out on the water and enjoying the beautiful scenery out there. Also true. He also pointed out that Colorado's system of dams and diverse river basins allow rafting companies to adapt based on when the water is released, as well as what system feeds that system. If one river runs low, outfitters can shift operations to another with better conditions. We will go where the water is, he says with a smile. Bradford explained he's seen dry years before, including 2002, and emphasized that it was still too early to determine how this season would play out. With April snow and May rain still ahead, he remained cautiously optimistic. But like he says, at least they know they have options.
Yes.
And there's those people that love the big whitewater river raft trips that, yeah. you know, oh my God, we're going to die or pretty close to it. But it's nice to get out there with some families and, you know, just getting out into the scenery on the water itself. So hopefully it's the best of both worlds this year for them.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you are not into whitewater rafting and you want something a little bit smoother and low key, Derek, this is right up your alley, buddy.
Okay.
But you got to go to Lake Tahoe.
I know some people that did something like this.
In Lake Tahoe or no, elsewhere?
Just locally.
Lake Tahoe Yoga and Tahoe Tastings are thrilled to announce the exclusive new collaboration, Boat to Board Adventure Yoga, a unique all-inclusive summer wellness experience that blends scenic cruising, stand-up paddleboard yoga, and luxurious lake-level indulgence. Sounds fascinating. Launching summer 2026, this private chartered experience invites up to 6 guests aboard Legend, a classic wooden motor yacht operated by Tahoe Tastings for a 3-hour journey. And we know what happened the last 3-hour journey.
Yes. 3-hour. How did they get so far on a 3-hour tour?
I don't know. But if there's a guy Gilligan on this boat, count me out. 3-hour journey to one of Lake Tahoe's pristine and secluded coves. Once anchored, participants will step off the boat and onto their boards for an all-level guided paddleboard yoga session led by Lake Tahoe's yoga's experienced instructor. Guests have the options to elevate the experience with curated add-ons, including a locally prepared brunch, a celebratory toast, all enjoyed while floating on the crystal clear waters of Lake Tahoe.
Hmm.
It does sound kind of interesting, except for the yoga part. As I say, my downward dog would be downward drowning dog. The experience, boat charter, paddleboard yoga, photos, optional food and beverages, capacity, private experience for up to 6 participants, pricing starting at $1,700, which is like $280 a person if you get all 6 of you.
Mm-hmm.
Duration, 3-hour tour. Departure, Tahoe Keys Marina, seasonal availability, summer only, weather permitting. Mm-hmm. Whether you're celebrating a special occasion or simply seeking serenity on the water, the boat-to-board adventure yoga experience is a unique way to connect with nature, care for yourself, and enjoy the best Lake Tahoe from a fresh perspective. So even something like... you see the bridal parties and stuff like that. They go down to Vegas like that.
Yeah.
This is, if you got a big enough bridal party. Still, you get out there, you get a boat ride out there for, you know, get out, do some yoga.
It's a nice experience.
It's a nice experience to do something like that.
Like, I've done yoga. Like, we go on vacation somewhere and whatever, go away for a week of skiing. And there's usually a bit of yoga once or twice during the week that I'll join my wife for and whatnot. But I cannot imagine doing that on a stand-up paddleboard. The muscle control and the balance you'd have to have.
Balance is for chumps.
I know some women at work who've done this, like just paddleboard yoga. And it just, I don't know how, I don't have the right balance or muscle control to
Part of it too is you watch some of these yoga people. And they do everything like slow, like Tai Chi almost slow.
Yes.
Whereas me, okay, now get into this position. It's like a fish flopping out of water, right?
You snap the paddleboard in half.
I've not done the yoga thing. Oh, here, do this. Can you do this? Yeah. Can you do this? Yeah. Can you do this? There, you're doing yoga. Yeah, that wasn't fun. Just because I can do it doesn't mean I have to. LakeTahoeYoga.com for more info. It does sound like something nice to do. You know, if you're looking for something a bit different and, you know, you get 6 of your friends out there or something like that, just to low-key, relax, have some giggles.
It's totally a bridal shower type vacation event.
I'm thinking this is a bachelor party thing.
No.
Trust me, what could go wrong? six dudes don't doing yoga.
Sean, nice yoga pants.
Thanks, pal. Lululemon is not my friend. Are you wearing a jock with those?
Oh, those are really stretched tight. They're transparent when they're stretched tight.
They didn't make them an extra, 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 extra pink. Oh, man.
Well, at least you got the pink ones.
Yeah, go check that out, LakeTahoeYoga.com. And it's a really nice boat, too, that they're on, too. It's an old classic wood,
yes,
wood motor yacht. What else we got? Last thing here, outdoor shows. We're getting to the end. Ottawa Outdoor Adventure Travel Show, April 25th to 26th in Nepean, Ontario, at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking, outdoor gear and equipment, and paddle craft. AdventureOttawa.ca for more info.
I said it before and I'll say it again. How is it free?
I don't care. It's free. I might go up and visit my brother that weekend and go to the show as a side gig.
Cool. That'd be good.
Lock and Paddle, Lachine Canal in Montreal, Saturday, July 11th. Peterborough Lift Lock on Saturday, July 18th. Hartwell's Lock, Ottawa, Saturday, August 15th. Parks.canada.ca for more info. If you've never been to one of these, especially if you're in the Peterborough area, go check one out.
Oh, it's fun. It's
the Lachine and Hartswell in Montreal and Ottawa are still small.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, Hartswell last year was, yeah, it was packed.
They drew a lot of people.
Yeah.
But the Peterborough one, always it's like always a massive crowd.
Yeah. So yeah, the Ottawa and Montreal one are going to pick up when it gets more interest going and people realize it's happening. And I still say you got to get back to doing the nighttime ones because those are awesome.
I think the liability issue is, you know, you wouldn't know till morning that you lost somebody.
That sounds like a them problem. Well, I mean, by that point, you know, their carcass is headed out into the lake somewhere, so
yes,
you can't prove it.
Down the Otonabee River.
Yeah, see? what else? I think that's it.
I've got nothing to add. Well, I do. As we were recording, my wife was messaging me. We had all that rain.
Yeah.
She goes, so in our basement, coming out of somewheres, there's water pouring across the floor. Not a lot. It's a puddle.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. That's not good.
Well, we've never had this much rain before either, so
yeah.
I'm curious.
Maybe it's just a...
It's all tile and concrete floor down there anyway, so there's nothing really much damage except baseboard.
Maybe, because you said you grew up in a house that had a river going through the baseboard.
It's following
Maybe
me.
It's following you.
The spirit of my parents is following
right?
me.
That's it, buddy.
A river runs through it.
Alrighty, I got to go on Amazon and get myself a...
Yeah.
A convict or referee outfit. And if you're a referee that's a convict, would it be checkerboard?
Oh, good point.
Because they go left and right or up or down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Zigzags?
I wonder if I should get two. One up and down and one left and right just to see if one's better.
Maybe one works better than the other.
Oh.
You can confuse the mosquitoes.
Right. And I noticed we did look. They did come in yellow and black.
Oh, yes. Well done.
I wonder if that would attract bees or bears. Because I'm the biggest bee they ever seen. And there's got to be a big hive filled with honey. I thought a canoe trip got mugged by Winnie the Pooh. All right. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.